itself to a tremendous amount of depth, and therefore it is a better to start with Talmud for the training of the mind. But however, what if I don't have such a good mind that I can't get to the depth of Talmud? So then a person could train his mind through Musa, through Mishlei. You see, if he studies Mishlei, he could train his mind through Mishlei, the more it's not as abstract. So therefore, a person that doesn't have the ability would be able to train his mind in this area. But there is a problem with Proverbs, is because you are starting with the subject that you must face your emotions. You see? You have to face your emotions. Now, if you have to, most people don't want to, and especially at the beginning, to have to face your emotions, people don't want to. So therefore, it's a hard thing. You have to concentrate on the training of the mind in a subject that's going to affect the very emotions and awaken emotions that is going to cause you not to be able to think. It's going to cause you not to think or to fight it. So therefore, it's a little more difficult, but however, if you have to, that's the problem. In other words, Talmud is a great, doesn't awaken any powerful emotions, it's just a training of the mind. But however, if you don't have the ability, then you have to use Mishlei. Or when you study Talmud, and then you go to Mishlei, you will have the problem of dealing with your own emotions. And that'll be a big problem in the training process. But however, Mishlei was so written that it will train your mind. So if you want to become a tzaddik, then you have to sit down and study Talmud and know halacha and keep the halacha based on the ideas through the study of Talmud. How about what if you want to become a chassid? You want to become a kind person, okay? Now, there are two types of the selfishness. There's a foolish selfishness and an intelligent selfishness, okay? The book of Mishlei, strange as it might seem, is to help you become intelligently selfish. Okay? Right. Now, what does that mean? It means that most people, let's say for instance, let's take a case where a person makes a decision, he wants to be a crime, he wants to go into crime, life of crime. Now the thing is, he never investigates himself, and he doesn't investigate whether that life is a beneficial life or not. And what are the consequences of living that type of life? In other words, I one time gave the example, like if a person would ask how to go up the ladder in the mafia. So we would advise them, say, you know, get a job with one of the low bosses, do everything you're supposed to do, and then when you're ready to move, and make a lot of friends, you see. When you're ready to move up, kill the guy that you work for, that taught you everything, kill him, you see. Then work for the next guy, you see? Then kill him, so you sort of kill the top guy, okay? Okay? Then he asks his advisor, well, what happens when I get to the top? What do I do then? He says, well, then you'll spend the rest of your life watching your back for other people that are moving up the ladder. Now, most people do not join the mafia because they were raised in a society, in their society or their religion, not to join the mafia. We're saying that if you don't join the mafia for that reason, then you're not a chacham. You're not wise. That is not wise. Wise is that you do not join the mafia because you made a rational evaluation and you see that that life is not a worthwhile life and therefore you don't join it. You see? That is a chacham. You see? So therefore, he's interested in the best possible life that the physical world has to offer, but he investigates what is the best life. And therefore, when he investigates it, he will show all the other lifestyles. When you go through Mishlei, you will see that. Go through all the lifestyles and all the different emotions and different areas that could affect you until you realize that the only life is the life of Torah. You see? And you must go through such an evaluation. You see? Now, when I do this, and I want to satisfy all my emotions, I must have a true knowledge of my emotions. Okay? If you want to satisfy yourself You're totally selfish. And you want to satisfy yourself. You must understand who you are and what your needs are. Our needs might be different, and how we work our lives is very different, and we have to understand the feelings, our unconscious feelings. In other words, like this. Let's say, for instance, the person wants to be a builder. Big builder. He wants to spend his life building. He has to build the biggest building in the world. He's driven, okay? Now, that guy will not have time to satisfy his enjoyments in life. What about his pleasures of life? You see, he's working 18, 19 hours a day. He doesn't have time to satisfy his pleasures. There's a part that is not being satisfied. The guy that goes into pleasure is not satisfying the desire to accomplish. You see, he has to have a bad self-image because, you know, he's a beach bum. He's just walking around the beach. He's not doing anything. Can't have a good self-image. You understand? You have to feel a certain sense of accomplishment. So that each one doesn't understand that you're a total person and you have to take into consideration the total person and what type of life that takes to live a total person, all aspects of your personality. What people that are driven close off other emotions. I remember one time two people were hiking. One was in good shape, and one just had a desire to keep up to the guy in good shape because of his ego. When he got to the top of the mountain, he collapsed. He couldn't even recognize his physical needs. His drive did not allow him to recognize his physical needs. Closes off all parts of you that you don't recognize. You see? So therefore, you must understand all aspects of your life and every angle so that you can really help yourself. You understand? Or not, you can never be happy. Okay? Now, after you become an intelligent, selfish person on that caliber, then you could be kind to others. Not before. So therefore, the system is first you must learn that you should not deal with particulars, you should deal with systems. That in itself will take you away from the life of the Russia. Because the Russia lives the life of particulars, and you want to live the life of a system. But also, since you want to live the life of the system, you also want to have a good life, so you have to investigate all your needs. And when you investigate all your needs, you will get to know if you do it correctly, you will get to know all your needs and exactly how to satisfy them. Only when you understand then when you reach the level of the chassid, the highest level, where you're totally involved with others and to help others, you see, you will have the knowledge of human nature and you'll know exactly how to help people. Most people, they help it blindly. Like, there's certain rules, always be nice. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? But it's not based on chachma, on understanding this person's particular needs. You understand? Like, for instance, if you notice, when most people buy a present, they usually think of themselves, that's the only way they could think of it, of what do they want to give. But very few people try to work out, analyze the person, and to figure out the needs of the person and buy the present according to the person you're buying for. That takes chachma. That takes understanding the other person's needs and what his needs are. You see? So therefore, once you understand the needs, once you understand your own needs, then you could be aware of other people's needs, and then you could truly help another person according to their very needs. In other words, when it comes to evil, whether I should know evil or not, of course, because since the human being is basically driven by his emotions, so he has to know the nature of evil, so he has to study evil. He has to know the nature of evil also. Even to understand his own evil inclinations and how his inclinations work, he has to understand how evil works. And that you study sometimes the greatest evil people, you understand, you could start seeing your own basic needs. Okay, we said that you go from intelligent selfish, then you can become a chassid. But the question is, what's the nature of the chassid himself? The nature of the chassid is a person that does not have any relative value. In other words, Relative value is I evaluate myself in relationship to other people, like competition, jealousy, you know, greed. It's always an evaluation with other people. So because I'm evaluating myself through other people, so I don't, it bothers me that they have something. Because if they have something, it means they're beating me. And since I'm evaluating myself in relationship to the other person, if I come down lower than him, so then that's bad for me. So I can't tolerate that he would have something. The chassid has undid these emotions, and therefore he is not just in the life of reality, and he evaluates himself based on his knowledge of himself, not in relationship to others. Once you start evaluating yourself based on your knowledge of yourself, then you're not in competition. Because if you, in other words, when you start out, you always evaluate yourself in relationship to others. So therefore, if another you can't help a person that you're in competition with, that you're trying to beat. So therefore, once you have those emotions, you truly cannot help a person. Because there's always the other part that holds off. But however, the chassid that recognizes his he went through the stage of intelligent selfishness, meaning that he understands his needs and he deals with it based on objectively his needs and not measuring others, you see, then you could truly do for others, and that knowledge will help him, the original knowledge will help him help other people and be happy for other people when they're successful, even if they're more successful than himself. Doesn't matter. You're successful there. I can't, that's not my ability. So I'm not even going to try. I'm not in competition with you. I have no competition. Once again, let me go over the order, okay? Summarize here, okay? Every human being starts out totally selfish and only deals with their particular needs, okay? The first thing is that he has to realize that there are systems, that the particulars are only part of the universal, you see? And therefore, he must look at things through the universal. That's, in Torah, that first step comes through Talmud, halacha, or Jewish law. Okay? The next thing is that he has to become selfishly intelligent. Okay? The first person was selfish completely. But once you become a chacham, now you could think about your own life and evaluate your own life. Well, they could be happening in, you know, simultaneously. You'd be studying Gemara and studying Mishlei and developing both simultaneously, so that you start becoming intelligently selfish. Okay? Now, when you become intelligently selfish and you have the whole idea of systems, then you can undo your relative value system. By relative value system, I mean where I evaluate myself in relationship to others, you see? Once I undo that, then I can truly help another person because I have no emotion stopping me from helping others. Now the question is, how does all these ideas fit into the verses? In the first verse, when we're talking about a wicked person, that he only thinks of himself, he will fail. High probability. We're talking about within the laws of nature. High probability he will fail, and therefore in the long run it will not benefit him his wealth, and he won't have it. Okay? The second thing, when a person is in a catastrophe, you see, Now he knows how to operate in everyday life, but the fact is that he still has emotions that he's not aware of. And as long as you have emotions that are unconscious and you're not aware of them, then they could affect your thinking process and you'll make mistakes. See, therefore, the chassid is a person that undid these emotions, and therefore he will make less mistakes. One way of looking at the pasuk. The second way is that if you read through Tehillim carefully, the Psalms, you will see that King David talks about a chassid. King Solomon talks about the wise and the righteous. King David in Psalms talks about the chassid. When you reach the level where you do not have the relative value system, you see, then there is the possibility of God relating to you personally, and so therefore he could protect you personally on the day of a catastrophe. So it comes out you could be protected when you become a chassid in one of two ways. One is you could make decisions, quick decisions, without your emotions interfering. So therefore, within the laws of nature, you're better off. Or two, when you reach that level, then God could intervene for you and God will protect you, so you'll be protected that way. Those are the two possibilities of learning the pasuk. In other words, by catastrophe, in other words, in everyday life, in the chapter 11, verse 4, where it says the treasure houses where wealth will not benefit you on the day of a catastrophe, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, that's talking about the tzaddik. Okay? Now, the thing is that since he operates based on system, on everyday life he'll be better off than the Russia. The Russia is self-destructive. As you read through Mishlei, verse after verse, you'll see that the wicked are simply self-destructive. But however, the tzaddik will make it through. But however, even he, and a sudden thing, something outside of him, you see, by catastrophe, we mean something outside of him, something out of the ordinary happens, that he's not aware of, suddenly it happens. To make a decision in that way, usually your emotions take over. When you're under stress, then your emotions take over, so he's going to make an error. But however, the chassid who has undid these emotions, so he naturally, whatever happens, he naturally looks at it in a totally rational way. He doesn't have emotions making any decisions for him at all. So he naturally goes to the chachma when he makes a decision, even if it's immediate. The question is, what does it mean by charity saves you from death? Okay? There are two types of death. There's death that, you live out your life and you die, right? Now let's put it this way. According to your genes, if we could read genes correctly, we'd be able to predict exactly when you're going to die, except if you don't live a healthy life. Okay? So when we use death as that it's like a punishment, it means that you are not living the correct type of life and you will live a terrible life. The ultimate would be that you'll die young. Okay? Now, the way you die young, if you live an incorrect life, is in two ways. One is, let's say you make a decision to smoke. That's definitely going to shorten your life, right? But there are other kinds, and they're first finding out in modern times this idea. But however, I saw it in the Ibn Ezra, and I saw it in the Rambam, that they both hold that conflict shortens your life. And the best way of seeing that idea with your eyes, is to look at President Carter when he first started, and 4 years later, how he looked 4 years later, and President Clinton, how he looked when he first started, and 8 years later. Okay, if you look at their face, the drawn and the puffy eyes, I mean, it's unbelievable what a change in how pressure changes a person. There you see the ultimate. So you really see that pressure, you don't live the life of Torah, you're constantly in conflict and battle with your conflict. I mean, it's definitely going to shorten your life. Okay, we're going to do Mishlei chapter 16, verse 4, okay? It says, all actions of God are for his benefit, and also the wicked on the day of his evil. All the works of Hashem, all the works of God is for his benefit or for his purpose, and also the wicked on the day of his harm or evil. All right, the first question that we have is, what does it mean for God's benefit? I mean, we cannot benefit God at all. God is not benefited by this world at all. Well, for his sake, you know what I mean? What does it mean for God's sake? What does that mean? Right, what we mean by the day of evil, we mean the day of retribution. Okay?
But what retribution?
Retribution is the consequences of their actions of God punishing them. The exact translation is that all the works of God are for his sake, meaning God, and also the wicked on the day of retribution, which means that on his day of retribution, the wicked person, when he gets retribution, that is for God's sake. Okay? It goes back to the first half. It's like an example of for God's sake. Okay? Right. For his sake means that God created the world with wisdom. And everything in this world shows God's wisdom. Okay? Everything in this world shows God's wisdom. Okay? Now, and one being was created that could recognize God's wisdom. That's the human. Okay? Now, the question is, evil is not a benefit. Evil is a harm. Let's understand what evil is. Evil is a system. God can only create systems. He created a system called the evil inclination or the human psyche. You understand? The human emotions are, in other words, when the emotions make decisions and go to the extreme, that is evil. Okay. Now, therefore, this system, the psychological makeup of the human, was created for the human being to see the world incorrectly. Okay, which you do. In other words, if you're stingy, so you cannot see the logic behind giving charity. Can't see it. You won't be able to see it. You can't accept it. You understand? So the thing is if you're a criminal, you don't see anything wrong in taking something. You can't grasp that idea. It makes you see life, that it is a benefit to be unjust. You see? So therefore, you can't, even when we look at the evil people, sometimes we say, look how good it is to be evil. Look, they get away with it. So it stops us from seeing the world correctly, and we see the world incorrectly. We go to extremes. And that's how injustice comes about. So the thing is that is contrary to the world of wisdom. You understand? That is contrary to the world of wisdom. Because, in other words, in everything we should see God's wisdom. God created the world, I don't know for the purpose, but the benefit of the world is that you should see his wisdom. Okay, all his wisdom. And here there's one area where you don't see his wisdom, where there's a system created for the opposite purpose of doing harm to the world and breaking down his system. Right, so since evil is that which breaks down the system, then the question is, why did God create evil? The first answer is that it's for free will, that God created evil so that there should be free will, that a person could choose between good. There was only two ways, in other words, either the correct answer or one way is in line with reality and one way is not in line with reality. That's the way you could get two possibilities so that you could have free will. But still in all, why did God create evil? I mean, it's true, but how could God create evil? That happens to be true. That God created evil because of free will. He wanted free will. But the question is, how could he create evil? Yeah. The question is that some people want to say that God didn't create evil, but some people want to say ignorance is evil, and he didn't create ignorance because that's what evil really is. There's different things like that. But the fact is that evil is the cause of evil is the emotion. And God created a system, a psychological part of the human, that the psychological part of the human, if not evenly keeled, then will draw you to one place or another. Or even if it's evenly keeled, you don't think out things logically, you'll do a lot of things correctly if you're evenly keeled naturally. But if you don't think it out, there will be mistakes. Mm-hmm. And it is definitely most people have extremes in certain places, so they're drawn to those extremes in those areas. They would definitely make mistakes. So you created something that causes you to be ignorant. In other words, the emotions blank out the reality. So therefore, he definitely created a thing which causes you to be ignorant, and that ignorance definitely causes you to do harm. That is evil. In other words, what we're saying is that all the emotions are good. I mean, the lion is all there, instincts are good because they're doing God's will. The only thing God created the human that his emotions and instincts are good, except when they go to an extreme. When they go to the extreme, then they blind the mind from seeing the truth. That is evil. It's not the emotions are evil. It's the emotions that are extreme, that doesn't allow you to think straight, that is evil. The answer is like this. Let's say, for instance, somebody would cut you with a knife. Now, cutting your body with a knife is always bad, even under surgery. Even if you're under surgery, when the cutting of the body cannot be good. But you're willing to take the harm for the benefit, the ultimate benefit, of what the operation will do. The same thing with lying. Lying is never, ever good. Yet the Torah says, the Torah doesn't prohibit lying, says you should stay away from lying because certain times you have to lie. There is a situation where you have to lie. But you can't say when you lie it's good. But the situation demands for the overall picture, it is better to lie in that situation than to not to lie. But however, the act of lying itself is a harm. You see, it's never a good. But we allow the lie for that particular situation. And I say the same thing here. Because God wanted free will, and the free will is more important, okay, than it was very important to God, and that I use metaphorically very important, and so therefore he had to create evil so that he could have the free will. Okay? So therefore God did create evil, but for the purpose of the free will. That is what we said before. I'm just clarifying that sometimes things are not good, but however the overall picture is that it is good. You have to look at the overall picture, and for the overall picture that we should have free will, that is why God created evil. Right, so the question that we have to ask is, what is the wisdom? But however, there, even though the nature of evil is that I look at life incorrectly, the question is, what is the wisdom in there? Because that's what the verse is saying, that everything that God creates, you could see his wisdom there. That's what it means for his purpose. What does it mean? It means that you could see wisdom. So the question is that the verse is asking, what is the wisdom in evil? Since there shouldn't be any wisdom in evil, wisdom is not seeing the world correctly. So if it's not seeing the world correctly, so then there shouldn't be any wisdom there. Okay. The wisdom is that it is not a chance that sometimes an evil person fails, or sometimes God intervenes and punishes an evil person. Evil must have consequences. Since it's not in line with reality, there must be consequences. If you do something not in line with reality, something wrong will happen. So therefore, if it's in the laws of nature, there'll be high probability. Every once in a while, a person might be able to bypass in the laws of nature the consequences. Okay? But however, mostly, you will see the consequences of a person that doesn't live a correct life. And also, if it's such an evil where God decides to intervene, where it's a situation where God can intervene, then it would certainly get where God intervenes, it's not chance anymore, then they will certainly get their consequences and their retribution. And when you see these two systems, how it works, and when you see it in the physical world, you see that it must happen, that evil cannot get away with anything, but it must get consequence, except, like I said, in the rare case, so then there you will see God's wisdom and be drawn to God again through that area of wisdom. The question is, what is the case that I said the rare case is where a person is evil and he gets away with it? Now, you have to understand, insofar as happiness, he can never be happy. That's 100%, he cannot be happy. Okay? But however, sometimes he will not get the physical consequences of his actions. In other words, he can get away with it under rare cases. There are rare cases where a person gets away with it. One of them was, I think it was the original Ford, he had people killed. I think they went against him on, they wanted to start a strike, they wanted to organize unions, they had people killed, he had them shot, and he lived till he died. You understand? He lived afford. Then he lived till an old age, and then he died. You understand? Natural death. You understand? So I think that was the case. I remember vaguely. It was one of these wealthy guys, and he broke a thing by having people shoot the people that wanted to go on strike. That broke the strike. And he didn't die early, but you can't tell me the guy was happy. That we could prove that he's not happy. Okay, we're doing chapter 10 in Mishlei, and we're doing verse 4. And it says, a poor person makes you will become poor if you make false weights. And the hands of the diligent will become wealthy. Okay? Now, the Rabbeinu Yonah defines false weights, that he makes false weights, that a person acts upon his strategy of cheating others. Okay? So that's how the Rabbeinu Yonah learns the pasuk, okay? That when you strategize for cheating others, then you will become poor. The quality that we're dealing with is not cheating per se, but the person that strategizes to cheat. He's a thinker. He is a thinker, and that he works out methods of how to cheat people. There are certain people that are cheaters that they don't think. That's a different problem. Okay? And they have different consequences. But we're talking about a particular type of greed or cheating in the sense that he strategizes. He makes strategies and plans and thinks about it. In other words, this cheating is a result of a strategy. But he does do the act of cheating. But let's say I strategize my whole life on cheating, but I never do it. I mean, then I just didn't do it. You know what I mean? But we're talking about where he carries it through. All right. The question is that we have to deal with first is, why would you become poor if that's what you if you have that quality, if you strategize to cheat? Why is it a necessity that you will become poor? And in fact, sometimes we don't always see it. You're right? So we have to understand what the verse is talking about. You'll notice if you've been following the news, in the 80s and the 90s, if you invested in the stock market or you went into business, the odds of you losing was very little. Then at certain times of history, you went into business or went into stock market, the odds of your success is very little. So you see, your success or failure is a lot dependent on the society that you're in. Okay? So, in other words, like this. When he strategizes, his strategy, in other words, the person is a thinker. And if he's a thinker, then he has to be missing what we're saying here. The verse must be saying that in his thinking, he must be missing a step, something he's missing. What he's missing is that his desire for money is very narrow, and only the desire for money, but he does not notice how society affects him. That's what he doesn't notice. He doesn't notice the overall picture that he has to have a society to make money. Now, if one person in a society cheats, it's not going to affect the society. It's not going to affect the society. But as the society, but if people learn from that guy, say, why should he get away with it? I'm also going to do it. And the whole society starts cheating, then there's going to be, the society is going to fail. Nobody's, you know what I mean? Everybody's trying to take and nobody's giving. So the thing is that they're going to destroy the society. An example, like for instance, the oil companies, according to one of the congressmen, is that they did not build refineries for many, many years. So you see, they had a strategy years ago, so they wouldn't build refineries, and then after a while, it's not their fault. Look, I don't have any refineries to build, to make no more oil. And then they don't have enough oil, so then the price goes up, so they make a big killing in the oil market because they're able to sell at higher prices, which is happening. So they didn't really do anything wrong, but they strategized as to cheat. But however, the fact is that what's happening is a lot of their customers cannot afford the oil or gas. So therefore, they stop buying, okay? Now, this will take a certain amount of time, okay? Now, what happens then? There's only one thing left. Well, the only way they're going to make money if they got a war. You understand? So the thing is that you see that it's a vicious cycle, and they don't have the picture, the overall picture, that they're going to destroy the society. And not only that, they separate a big distinction between the rich and the poor. Becomes greater and greater. As they become richer and the poor become poorer, comes a bigger, then there becomes a rebellion. People are not going to tolerate that. You know what I mean? Then you have the people that are against society. I mean, so the thing is, by definition, if you working out a strategy and you're planning over years to take money, there's many ways in which you affect the society. And when you affect the society in this way, it weakens the society. It takes away from what you have. It could be sometimes that a person is not affected by it. His children are affected by it. These things could happen over a long period of time. But the fact is that if he knew, let's say, for instance, if a guy in the tobacco company knew that one of his grand or great-grandchildren were going to die of cancer because he's smoking, do you think he would have pushed a cigarette? But he can't think that way. He only thinks in a very narrow view of only what he could get right now. He can't see the overall picture. You can be a successful thief on the short run, but as the society breaks down, then everything will break down. Okay, so the mistake of the person is that he looks at life from a narrow point of view, only from the point of view of his greed. And therefore, he works out strategy, and within his framework, he works out every single point. And he could be successful in his strategy, but because he doesn't see the overall picture, so therefore, in the long run, he will fail. Because he'll destroy the society that he's dependent on, and then he will come down. Now, depending how big he is, sometimes it could take a couple of generations before it brings him down. But it will, in time, it will come. He will come down. And therefore, then the Rabbeinu Yonah says the word rush with an aleph, meaning head, meaning that even if you're successful and you are wealthy, you will become poor. It's not a poor. In other words, usually we think a person starting out, you know what I mean, he'll stay poor because he works this way. But he's saying that's why they have the double phrase, rush two ways. One is poor, and one is successful. So if you're successful, if you start using strategy to cheat, you will become poor. That's why they added had a play on words, the two words of head and poor. Once you destroy a society, then then you're part of the society, then you fail. All right, we have one more question. According to this, the second half of the verse says, "In the hands of the diligent will become wealthy." And he defines diligent as a person that works he works with his hands. In other words, he really works for a living. That type of person will be successful. So according to this, the question is, what is definition of diligent? Right. The question is like this. When you give a definition of a word, it must fit into the whole picture. Now, we're comparing the diligent to the person that strategizes, okay? So when you say that the diligent works, well, what does that have to do with the strategy? In other words, it doesn't fit in. In other words, like, if you're talking about a lazy person, then you could tell me the opposite of a lazy person is a person that works hard, that he was not afraid to work with his hands or do whatever is necessary to get the job done and do it correctly. But we're not talking about lazy. We're talking about greed, and you strategize to cheat. That's greed. Now, the opposite of greed is not that I work with my hands, that I work everything out. That's the opposite of lazy. So the question is, the way we're learning the verse, that cannot be the definition of diligent, yet the Rabbeinu Yonah says that is the definition. So that is the problem that we're dealing with. One possibility that's mentioned is that just like the person that strategizes to cheat and to take shortcuts, this guy makes a strategy to do a good job, which is good for, which is, he doesn't skip any steps. Now we said that the overall picture that the greedy person doesn't have is he doesn't have the picture that he is totally dependent on society. There's a certain lack of humility to recognize that I am dependent on others for my success, and therefore the success of the society will help me be successful. So therefore, that must be the philosophy of the diligent person, that he only does that which is beneficial to the society, because he realizes that if he benefits the society and the society is successful, then he will be successful because he is part of the society. So part of diligence, and the way we're looking at it from the strategy point of view, he has to also be intelligent. To be diligent, our definition of diligence is that I have an overall picture of the whole system, and therefore I recognize that diligence is important, but it's important in the sense insofar as doing something which will benefit the whole society. I'll give you an example. In other words, like this. A shoemaker will make less money than a gambler. But a gambler, even though he might not be cheating, is bringing down society because he's not adding anything to society. You see? While the shoemaker is. You see? So he would take that into consideration, also that which is beneficial, because he knows that his success is dependent on the society, and therefore will only do things which benefits the whole society. And that we see from the overall picture of the way we defined it before, that the strategist, the greedy person, he doesn't recognize the overall picture. So the diligent person must be a person that does recognize the overall picture. The question is, isn't that itself a selfish motive? That I'm only doing for the society because I will be successful, okay? You have to understand that the book of Proverbs is the introductory book, okay? Now, therefore, I must educate you based on what motivates you right now. And since selfishness is what motivates everybody when they start out, so therefore, we show you within your own framework that you're more successful by living the life of Torah, living the life of Proverbs, living the life of, in this particular case, seeing the overall picture. You'll be more successful selfishly than if you are not a thinker. That is the first step. Of course, that motive should change for different motives as you develop. The development in Torah is through education, but the education affects your motivation, what motivates you, and how you operate. In other words, let me try to put it this way. The first guy has a very clear picture in his framework. The greedy person has a very, but what he's missing is the overall picture, you see? But within his framework, he works out every detail, every idea, and the strategy. You see? He makes sure he fills every gap. He is a thinker, and he works it out. See, but the diligent person is a person that takes into consideration the overall picture also. When he picks his particular job or what he's going to do, he must take into consideration, he realizes he must take into consideration the society, because his success is dependent on the success of the society. So, the question is that he defines diligent as working with your hands, and the question is what is the how does that, where do I get from there that it means that I have the overall view? If I just had the words working with his hands, I would say I don't have it.
what he's going to do, he must take into consideration, he realizes he must take into consideration the society, because his success is dependent on the success of the society.
So,
the question is that he defines diligent as working with your hands. And the question is what is the, how does that, where do I get from there that it means that I have the overall view? If I just had the words working with the hands, I would say I don't have it. I don't have it from there. But I have it from the total picture of the way we're interpreting the verse. In other words, since we're interpreting the verse that the strategist, we're dealing with the strategist, and he's missing an overall picture, that's what destroys him, so it must be that the diligent person must have that. Because he is the opposite. In other words, every verse works in opposite, so the opposite must be that he does have it. So since he must have, so therefore, the second half of the verse must be that he does have the overall picture.
No.
So when he works with his hands, it means that he's working with his hands by no shortcuts. No shortcuts, and for the benefit of society. But the benefit of society I'm not getting from the work of the hands, I'm getting from the overall picture of the whole verse.
Okay.
That's how I'm getting the definition, through the picture of the verse, not from the words.
Okay,
we're in chapter 10, verse 5. And it says, he who gathers in the summer is an intelligent person. He who sleeps at harvest is an embarrassed person. The Rebbeinu Yonah says that because he was dealing with diligence, and they are energetic, so therefore he came to teach us about the subject of being energetic. And he says, this is what the verse is teaching, that the mind... drives a person by subjects that he is responsible to do, and the lack of mind prevents it, and the lack of mind prevents him from carrying it out. So the first question we ask on this part is we see a lot of energetic people in school. They get very good grades, and they never learned Mishle, and they don't have any... They're not driven by thought. They're driven by some other thing. So why does he say that only thought does it? And then he says... okay, we'll skip that. Then he says that embarrassment is the opposite of the mind, of thought, seichel, thought, because he brings a verse which says that according to a man's wisdom is he praised. Right? And shame, being shamed, is the opposite of praise, because shame comes from, is derived from disgrace. To say it comes from being disgraced, and therefore that's the opposite of it. So it's not praiseworthy. It's not praiseworthy, so it can't be come from the mind. So the question is, what is the connection between the mind? What is he getting at with the mind, and what's these opposites? The mind and shame. I mean, why is how is he connected exactly and precisely? How is he connecting these two things? Right. The first question that we're asking, that we're dealing with, is the question of zrizus, meaning energetic. That intelligence comes from intelligence, and there's another type of energetic. That is that you're driven by some type of emotion, and it's not based on any thought process. Like, for instance, it's very hard for me to accept that people really, kids, especially 7th graders, 8th graders, they talk about that they got to get good grades for college. In no other area do they think so much in the future, except over here. Why over here? But no other area are there. Do they know the results of their actions? The answer is the only reason why they're driven is because of their family, the way they were raised, or in their society. What's driving them is something, some type of an emotion or some type of a fantasy that drives them for success, but not because the mind tells them that this thing is a good thing. Okay? Zrizus Zrizus is not, it must come from the mind, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, how he understands Mishlei. Okay? So therefore, the first step that we're taking is that the Zrizus, or the energetic person that we're talking about, the source of the energy comes because he sees the truth and the necessity of this thing. But if it only comes from an emotional source, even if it's the correct thing, whether it's correct or incorrect, whatever it is, whether the act is correct or like, for instance, you see people that are driven to crime, and they work day and night on crime, and they're involved in crime and all the strategies of crime, and you wouldn't call them energetic in the sense that King Solomon is talking about, right? So therefore, the thing is that energetic at source is someplace from the Yetzirah, the evil inclination, from the emotions, from the fantasies of a human being, you see? That is not the definition of Zrizus, okay? Our definition of Zrizus must come that the mind sees the truth about this, and that is what drives them. Let's go over the second question. The second question is, let's take his steps. He says, the first thing he says, that embarrassment is opposite of the mind. Now he goes to prove that. He says, the first step that he takes is because he quotes a verse that a man should be praised by his mind. And embarrassment is the opposite of praise. When you're embarrassed, it shows that you're not the opposite of praise. Because, and then he goes on to take a first step, because embarrassment comes from disgrace. In other words, close to disgrace. It could be embarrassed or disgrace. The same thing. And that is the opposite of praise. And since a person should be praised by the mind, so embarrassment is the opposite of the mind. Okay? Like, he took two steps to connect them. Okay? A little clarity. When he says that he's embarrassed, it means he's embarrassed because he did a stupid thing. He didn't gather in the... he was lazy. He didn't do his work. And so, therefore, embarrassed means that he's in a situation where he did a stupid thing. And he's paying the consequences for what he did. So, therefore, he is disgraced. Like, you see a lazy person that could have done something. Because of his laziness, he didn't do it. Like a guy could have studied... the night before, and he decided to do something else, and he failed. You look at the guy like there's something wrong with the guy. You know, well, I mean, for 2 hours, was it worth it? To fail, it's not worth it. See? In other words, the lazy person doesn't see the consequences of his laziness. Okay? He doesn't see the consequences of his laziness because he doesn't want to operate. So therefore, he doesn't think about the results. He only thinks of the immediate. The immediate, he doesn't feel like operating, you see? So therefore, he's not driven, unless he's driven to do it by some other emotion, which is not a chacham. He's not wise, and that's something else. That's what we said before, and that's just chance. That's dependent on your personality. And some things you'll do in an intelligent way because you were raised that way. Some things you'll do in a stupid way because you weren't raised that way. So therefore, it's all dependent on how you were raised, but not on what the mind sees. Not on you yourself deciding this is right or wrong. I think that clarifies the puzzle. The question is that sometimes I see a person sees the consequences of his actions, but he's still lazy. It means, there are two ways of being ignorant. One way of being ignorant is I don't have the information. Like, I don't know the consequences. I just don't know it. There's no way for me to know it. I wasn't taught it, right? So I don't know it. It's not that simple. The other way is that I know it, but it's not real to me, you see? And it's not real to me in two ways. Not real to me. It could be not real to me in two ways. One is, we say that a person, to become a maskil, a thinker, a chacham, or a person of wisdom, we say it's not just a matter of following this or that verse. It's a matter of studying through the book again and again and again until your personality changes and you think differently. So therefore, when you say you see the consequences and you don't act, it's because you have not changed. You're still working based on the old view of life. And even though you see this verse, it's not a change in your personality. It's like a little dent, hardly observable. Then you take another step, a little dent. Every time an idea becomes 100% clear to the mind, it makes a little dent, you see, until suddenly there's a change in the total personality. Then you are a chacham. So the first type is, I'm not a chacham. It's not real to me. The consequences, that's what's going to happen, it's not a real thing to me. I wasn't trained. The second thing, I am that type of person, but a powerful emotion hits me and makes me ignorant of the fact. You see, in other words, I know it, but the emotion removes the realness from me, or it might even make me forget it totally, the consequences, because the emotion makes me ignorant for the moment. So basically, the verse is saying like this, that the cure for laziness is a change in personality by becoming a chacham. That's what we're saying. That if you, the first step in undoing laziness and not living, and living by my mind where it recognizes the consequences of my actions, has to be a change in my total personality. And therefore, the first step in undoing laziness is developing that personality of becoming a chacham, where you're guided by wisdom. Okay, we're in chapter 10, verse 8. It says, a chacham leiv, a wise person, takes mitzvot. And a vilsef asayim, a fool, with his lips, yilave. And the Rabbeinu Yonah translates yilave as yitafe, she'll become, he'll do stupid things, like a tippish, a fool. Okay, he will do stupid things. Okay? That's what he translates it later. Okay, so the Rabbeinu Yonah says that the chacham leiv, he searches after mitzvah. And even if he doesn't, if he's not obligated, he still thinks with his thoughts, in what manner can he find to do a mitzvah? And he says, in the manner of Hosea. He quotes Hosea. Just one second. And it's in Hosea chapter 14, verse 2 and 3. It says, return, Israel, unto God, your God, for you have stumbled in your iniquities. Then the next pasuk says, take words with you and return to Hashem. Say to him, may you forgive all iniquity and accept good intentions, and let our lips substitute for bulls. Bulls meaning sacrifices. Okay? So he's saying that that you work out your ideas with the correct intentions, and in your mind you work out ideas how to do and how to live, how to do the correct things and how to act the correct life and to live the correct life. It must come first in your mind with the good intentions and thought out. Then the result is that you will do the correct life. But he searches to do the correct type of life. Now the Avil, he's going to define what Avil is. He's a person that does sins, and he's involved in sins with his hands and with his mouth. That's why it says the Fasayim, because of that. And it's not sufficient with only his actions, okay? So what does he mean? He says, and this is the proof for it. He says, because he is not overpowered by his yetzirah, by his evil inclination or his emotions, and or forced into desires. In other words, his desire takes over. It's not that type of person where suddenly emotion takes over and he can't control himself. That's not the reason why he does it. Only he agrees in his foolish heart. He says, even if I do the incorrect act, there will be no harm for doing these things. There will be no consequences. And see that he is the opposite of the Chacham Lev. Because the Chacham Lev, he's always looking for mitzvot and searching to do them through his mind, but not with his lips. What does it mean, not with his lips? That he doesn't brag about it. He doesn't praise himself about it. But he says a little and he does a lot. But the Avil, he's the foolish with his lips, and he admits his sins. The Avil, he makes a distinction here between the Avil and a person that desires to do right, but he's overpowered. Emotion takes over and he loses himself. He does the wrong thing. That person is not a fool. He has to somehow work out those areas which his emotions overpower him, right? But, however, the Avil, he holds what he is doing is right. And he'll talk about it. He'll brag about it. He'll brag about what he is doing. In other words, he holds philosophically that this is the right thing to do. And with his lips, he'll talk about it. He'll talk about things that are totally stupid and harmful and destructive. And he'll brag about it. What the Rabbeinu says, it's not enough that he does the action. There's certain people that do the action and they recognize it's wrong. They can't control themselves. He does the action, but he holds that it's the right thing to do. He holds it's the correct thing to do. You see? Like speaking Lashon Hara, a lot of people recognize that they shouldn't, but they don't know how to deal with it to stop themselves from talking Lashon Hara. It's very hard for a person, we're trying to understand the Avil and why he feels this way. Because it's very hard for a person to have a desire to do something and hold that it's wrong. So therefore he creates a philosophy that fits in with his desires, you see. And so therefore his mind agrees with his Yetzirah, his evil inclination, and then he talks about it as if this is the best thing, you see. And he shows his foolishness by showing it. But we know that if a person can't control himself but he knows he's wrong, that's a person that could deal with it. He knows there's a problem and he could deal with it. So he says that the Chacham Lev is the opposite of the Avil Sefasayim. He's the opposite. Why? Because the Chacham Lev uses his mind. He understands the benefit of living a righteous life, a just and righteous life. So therefore he's always thinking about how to deal with justice and righteousness and what's the best way of carrying it out. While he thinks about all his foolishness and how happy he is with his foolish life, and he doesn't recognize the consequences of his own life. While the person that's in between these two is a person that really wants to do right, but his emotions overpower him, so he recognizes he's doing wrong, and he recognizes that he has to work on it and deal with it. The question is why would a person want to look for more things to do? In other words, he lives a righteous life, he's a just life. What does it mean he's looking for more things to do? Why should he want to do that? In other words, that there are certain people that are driven to do good based on, you know, like a certain psychological thing. Well, that's what Ola was talking about, right? Mm-hmm. That their psychological thing, they're driven by certain psychological things to do what's right, then they'll do crazy things without thought. They'll do incorrect things in their righteousness. We're talking about an intelligent person. The question is, why would he want to look for more action? Okay. When it says to think through, when the Rabbeinu Yonah says that he should think his thoughts in what manner he could find mitzvahs to do, you say, the thing is that he is, in other words, when he thinks through, what he's thinking through, there are different things that he has to think through. First of all, person can't do everything. You can't benefit everybody, every human being. You understand? So therefore, you have to think through what your priorities are. Okay? What are your priorities? What does the society need? What do the people need? In other words, if you're going to do for people, if you're going to do kindness, if you're going to do chesed or tzedek or righteousness, or if there are mitzvot in the Torah that the subject is tzedek and chesed. That he thinks about these things, so he's working out what's his responsibility, where his responsibility lies, and what he has to do, and how much he should do of it. In other words, how much his capability of. He cannot, in other words, a neurotic person would say, well, I'm just going to do mitzvahs, and I'm just going to do, you know, and without thought, many times these people do more harm than good. That's the way, what you were asking, you see. That if a person is pushing, he's just going to look for things to do. That is not a chacham. I can't call him a chacham. I can't call him a wise person. Wise person means he thinks through the method. Says, Ezadech, what's the method? The method means that first I must evaluate my priorities. What does the society need? What is the best thing that I could do to benefit the society? And then what's the best way to carry it out because I'm responsible to benefit society and work with the society. So therefore, when he thinks it through, all the ideas, what is necessary to do things, then it is always there. There are more and more situations as he defines. He doesn't wait for particulars. If he's waiting for particulars, I mean, you know, it could be a good thing, but it might not be priority-wise. It might not be the main important thing. Something else he could have done. Like, for instance, even in tzedakah, there are different levels of giving tzedakah. Now, the highest level of giving charity is to lend a person money to become independent. If the person has the ability to be independent, certain people don't have the ability to be independent. But he works out all the different aspects and all the different priorities, what comes first and what comes second, what's the best way of doing things, so that when he's living in society and operating within the society, he is always looking for that which is based on the principles that he set up beforehand, what he thought through, so then he will find many things and many angles what to do in the life of righteousness and justice. Also, what the Rabbeinu Yonah means, what they are opposites, is that the avil, the fool, is a person that doesn't look at the consequences of his actions, you see? While the chacham leiv is past that. He works through to protect himself. That's the first step that a person must have, is to see the consequences of his actions. The Chacham Leiv has dealt with the consequences, and he knows what to avoid. Now he is moving into the area and putting his energy into the world of justice and kindness and the right way of living, what the whole book of Mishlei is talking about. Those type of mitzvahs that the book is talking about. So therefore, it's really opposite. It's not opposite in the sense that one person doesn't think about the consequences and the other does think about the consequences. No, he's saying one person doesn't think about the consequences, and the extreme opposite is the person that has dealt with life and understands to prevent. And he knows how to prevent all consequences. And he knows how to deal with that. But that is like a negative, to prevent me from getting harmed. Now there's the positive of doing good, and the good is the benefit of the whole society and to help people around me and to live the life of justice and righteousness. So therefore, in that way, he's on the opposite extreme, that he's doing the positive. He's past undoing the, in other words, is always in life that you have to be careful of the consequences, but he knows that area, he worked through that area, he's moving into the positive, to the life of justice and righteousness. So you see a few levels here. There's the person that doesn't, there's the lowest level is the person that thinks he's right, he doesn't think of consequences, and philosophically he holds all his stupidities as the right way of life. Then there's another guy that knows the right, but he has consequences because his emotions overpower him, you see? Then there's the third level where he has overcome all his emotions, of where they don't overpower him, and he protects himself from the consequences of his emotions. They reach that level. Then the fourth level is then he puts all his energy into the world, the life of justice and righteousness. So the first, again, we're going over the four. The first one is a guy that holds that he's 100% right, and he's doing everything that is wrong, and he's willing to talk about it. He tells people that he makes a fool out of himself by spreading these things as a philosophy, and it will lead to consequences. Second guy, he recognizes consequences, and he tries to protect himself from the consequences, but his emotions still overpower him. The third guy reaches a point where he has undid most of the emotions, or all of them, that that have affected his life to a that causes consequences to his life. Because once, in other words, he recognizes the truth, and when his emotions overpower him, so then he starts working on it because he doesn't want the consequences. So he reaches a point where the emotions don't overpower him, right? So that's the third level, where he reaches the level where he doesn't have the consequences. Then the fourth level, which is the opposite of the first, the opposite of the highest level, is where now he's looking to do justice and righteousness in society to benefit the whole system, where he sees the picture of the whole system and the benefit to having a system, or the benefit of kindness to people. So therefore, he does that. So he gets involved in that area. The first three is the selfishness. The first guy is a foolish type of selfishness. The second two guys are intelligent type of selfishness. They're working on the idea of undoing his bad traits, right? The third level, the highest level, what we're calling the fourth level, is where the person is involved in a system of justice. The change in the personality and the change in his motivation. It's not a selfishness anymore, but he sees the overall picture of justice and righteousness and kindness. He sees he's drawn to that area, the different type of person. We want to redefine the numbers. If we have two levels of selfishness. One level is a foolish type of selfishness, that's the evil. Then we have the in-between type of selfishness where he realizes he has the yetzer hara, his evil inclination overpowers him, and he tries to correct it so that he wants to have he's selfish that he wants to have a good life, you see, and that way he's still selfish. Then the third guy, the highest level, is the chacham lev, where he's not involved in this, but he's totally involved in the benefit of others. There's a change in his personality where he's involved with the whole general picture of what's going on about him. It's not a selfishness, but an overall picture of society and about life in general. In other words, there's a foolish type of selfishness, there's an intelligent type of selfishness, and then there's an involvement with the whole system, or the whole society, and it's involved with that system of reality, and it's not involved with the self. So we would say that the subject of the pasuk is the development according to the Torah. development of a human being according to the Torah. He starts out with the foolish type of selfishness, and he develops and he tries to benefit himself for a intelligent type of selfishness, and then the last step of his development through the world of Torah is to be involved in the society, in the world, and according to the system, and he relates directly to the system, and even when he relates to the individual, to the benefit of the individual is via the system that he relates to the individual. Right, verse 9. It says, he who goes with purity goes securely, and he who perverts his ways will be known. Okay? So he explains that he goes with purity goes with security. He says, a person does not leave his purity from his fear, maybe somebody, his friend, will overpower him. Okay? Right, so before we go on, we have to define what is purity. Okay? Right. Purity means that there is, like for instance, pure gold means it doesn't have any other components in it besides gold. All the other minerals that are mixed in the gold are separated. So pure gold, pure means where the bad is taken out, pure water, where the bad parts or chemicals that are in the water are taken out, so then it becomes pure. Same thing with a person, when a person's traits are pure, it doesn't affect the way he thinks. Okay, that's pure. In other words, there's no trait which affects his thinking process. Now, since we're talking about security, So the Rabbeinu Yonah says we're probably talking about a situation where somebody is going to overpower him, and there could be fear in a situation, right? That's why he says he walks securely, right?
Yeah.
So he says he has a fear that somebody's going to overpower him, and then he continues, but he does not act or he does not practice strategies and trickery in his dealings with people, and he doesn't terrorize, and he doesn't answer impertinence. In other words, he doesn't let the fear overpower him, but he continues operating in the same pure manner without any of these negative traits. You see? Okay? Now, the other side is a person who leaves the path of Yashrus. Yashrus is clear thinking. Because of his fear, and that because he'll be terrorized in the road, right? And he searches to protect himself, and the only way he knows how to protect himself is through crookedness. He'll be in greater trouble later on. What will be the trouble? Because it will become known that he left the good path, the path of correct acting, the correct way of thinking. Because the fear of his enemies came upon him. And the same thing, out of fear, he turns from the path of the Yashrus. And because of that, he adds to it the protection of his honor, and then he starts giving terror to others. He causes other terror, and he will be caught in this. It will not benefit all the strategy, and what will remain is the disgrace of being a perverted person. Right. So the Pasuk is talking about there are two ways of when you come into, in other words, we're not talking about a person that's on a very high level. He's just starting out, but however, he is still pure, okay? And because he gets into a situation where he has terrible fears. Now, sometimes you will find children that come into a situation of fear, either parents, teachers, classmates, and because of that, they learn, through them, they learn at a very early age to protect themselves. And when they learn to, sometimes it's later on, but when they learn to protect themselves, the only way they know, since they didn't have any training, so the only way they know is to use the very same method that was used upon them. Now, once that happens, then they become the very person that they were frightened of. And they start thinking of putting down people because of their, gives them honor, they feel greater, they look down on people, they enjoy, they feel like something special. If somebody's afraid of them, they feel like special, you see? So they train themselves in this type of area because of an unbelievable fear. To them, it was a terrible fear what could have happened, and because of that, they started to use traits that were totally incorrect because they did not know the correct way, you see? In other words, a person that's a chacham, that developed his world of thinking, so then when a catastrophe happens, he knows to protect himself. But he says, he's interpreting this pasuk that when a person is still pure, that he doesn't know any of these things, and suddenly an undue fear is placed on him, that affects the way he thinks, that affects the way he acts, and his whole personality could change because of that. Because some catastrophe in his life happened. Could be a catastrophe, could be something small, you know, fear of his parents or something, whatever it is. So therefore, that's the way he gets these bad traits. That's the way bad traits are formed, and that person will become an evil person himself. And he'll get the consequences of an evil person, namely, he'll be known. People will know, you know, this guy is a this kind, a harsh person, a vicious person. They'll know who he is because he carries out these type of acts. Okay? In other words, when a person is born, every person has they're basically evenly keeled. They don't have any extreme traits. What happens is, as he's being developed, these traits are learned. In other words, you have the traits, but the quantity is learned. In other words, like a person might have competition, but how much competition will a lot depend on how you're being raised. You see, and how much will affect you, and how much of an extreme. I mean, let's say if you're in a very competitive family, so then you could become more competitive. If you're in a repressed family that have guilt, so you pick up the fear, and you'll be afraid to compete. You see? So the thing is you pick up these traits, and it affects your personality, and it's then, if you ever decide to straighten yourself out in the future, then you have a difficult time straightening these things out. While if you were never in such a situation, you see, then you would stay evenly keeled throughout your life. That is the pure person, that he doesn't have any of the harmful traits, the extreme traits. In other words, the Tam, or the pure person, is not necessarily a thinker. We're talking about the nature of his emotions. In other words, there are certain people that are, you know, that they're like very tough people, you know, you don't like being with them. There are certain people that you know are repressed, like they're very nice, but it's because they're afraid, you're frightened. There's some people that you find that are extremely, always nice, they're evenly keeled, they talk nice to everybody, they're friendly with everybody, they're not drawn to an extreme in any case, you see? Most people are usually either they're held back or they're very extreme in the other end. You see, that affects the way you think, you see. So this guy that thinks clearly goes securely in the world. He has a security because his security is he's able to look at the life pretty clearly. He feels secure within himself. But a person that's frightened, you see, that, see, the fear changes the way you act. See, that's the, and it causes him to think in a distorted manner or a perverted manner. Like when you're frightened, it causes you to think in a perverted manner.
Okay.
There's a saying, a proverb that says, out of the frying pan into the fire. So what it means is that sometimes you're in such a bad situation you can't think straight. So you jump into something because you want to get away from this bad situation without thought, because of your fear, you jump into a worse situation. You see? So your mind was perverted by the fear. You see? The Tom, or the pure person, he's not affected by these things. He just goes to purely, he's an intelligent person, and it doesn't affect his thinking. He might not be a thinker, but his natural not being drawn to any extreme, that purity, not being drawn to any extreme, will allow him to think clearly and see things that even if he's not a thinker, he will see a lot of clear and beautiful ideas, even though he's not a thinker. He'll be a natural thinker. See what I mean? In other words, his reaction could be many different types of reactions. In other words, his reaction could be fear and backing off in a different situation, or his reaction to a certain situation is that he terrorizes others, he changes, you see? So the thing is that what we do know is that situations of fear, if they affect you, and they affect your personality, it will affect you in a distorted and perverted manner. You will think in a very incorrect manner, because the fear causes you to think incorrectly. That's what he's saying. He's saying the situation which can change your personality. But the person that's a Tom, you say, that's pure, he stays through those difficult situations. He feels secure because he accepts the situation for what it is, and he just tries to do the best that he can in that situation. It's not necessarily wrong to fear your enemies and to fear certain things, as long as it doesn't distort the way you think and it doesn't take over your life. But sometimes there's a fear that's not it's not perverted. It's a natural fear. A person has a fear of an enemy, has to protect himself. So that's something else. But it doesn't change his character, his personality. Personality stays pure, you see, but if the fear changes his personality, then he starts having a distorted view of life.
Okay.
In other words, the Pasuk is talking about that two people could be in a situation of fear, and they will react to that fear differently. One will look at the fear and say, look, I'm afraid, but I have to deal correctly. Will not affect me, and therefore I have to go operate the way I always operate. That's all it means, secure.
Okay.
He's secure. The other person affects his personality. That's different. So usually by children you find that they're very young and they can't protect themselves, so therefore if they're in a very fearful situation, their whole personality will be affected. But if you have a good childhood and you have a good family life, then you have a certain security. Even if it happens later on in life, there's a good possibility that the personality will not change. Okay, we're going to do Pasuk Yud Aleph. It says, the source of life is the mouth of the righteous, and the mouth of the wicked covers violence. Okay? So the Rabbeinu Yom explains, he says, it's as if the mouth of the tzaddik, is the source of life. And anybody can drink from its flow. Anybody that drinks from its flow will live. Well, okay? Because the lips of the tzaddik never stop from speaking mussar and words of righteousness. And they give life to those that hear and listen to their words. That's the first half. The second half, Rabbeinu Yonah says that I already explained this above in Pasuk Vav, and over there he explains it that he is